Hello, everyone. I'm Sean Allen. This is the Pony Development Sync for Tuesday, March 1st. Joe is actually our host today, as per normal, but 1Password wouldn't load for him, so I'm logged into the account, which can do the recording, and it was easier sequencing things to have me do this little intro here. If everybody who's here could introduce themselves and say hi, starting with Joe, could you introduce yourself?
I'm Joe McElvain, your struggling host.
Right. Borja.
Hello there.
Ryan.
I'm Ryan Higginson.
Jason.
Hello.
So hopefully from that, everybody will be able to recognize the voices and put them to folks when we're having the rest of this conversation. And in the meantime, the auto-generated agenda is in the sync channel for today. And with that, Joe, I will turn it over to you.
Thanks, Sean. So yeah, as per normal, we'll start with the RFCs for today. That was my best weathercaster voice. Start with RFCs today. In the RFCs repo, we have pull request 200 expand math package. This was opened by Ryan yesterday. Thank you, Ryan. It looks like, yeah, there's been a little bit of discussion on this so far, but in general, those who haven't read it yet, this is talking about setting up the structure of various sub packages to propose for inclusion in the standard library underneath the math prefix. That includes math/big with arbitrary precision numbers, math/series for mathematical series, math/constants for mathematical constants, math/rational for rational data type and related functions, math/complex for complex data type and related functions. And I don't necessarily understand this part, Ryan.
It's basically a catch-all for that, like for any functions, like we have the is prime right now, which doesn't fit into the other sub packages that I've proposed.
Okay.
So the idea to have something like that where we have a dedicated place for anything that might be useful, but you know, it's not just a util package.
So but there's no defined name for it yet, is that right?
And that's the idea, is that okay. I'm like, I don't really care what it ends up being called, but I want there to be a place for that sort of situation where it doesn't fit into any of the other sub packages.
Okay, thanks. So what kind of discussion do people want to talk about for this today?
I think that was anything? A question. Was that a question to Ryan? I'm assuming it was a question to Ryan.
No, it was for anyone who has thoughts or questions or topics about this RFC.
So I left some comments on it. I'm very worried about the math constants one. I'm not really sure how that's supposed to work or what that would actually look like in reality. It doesn't make any sense to me for how I can imagine it. So I'd want to see more on that. In terms of, I mentioned on there, in terms of the number types like rational, complex, et cetera, I don't really know why those would live in math, like what makes them somehow different than other types to live in math. Math to me feels more like a package where there are different algorithms, et cetera, which can be used in a generic fashion with a variety of different data types, and that then putting like fractional or real or whatever in there seems a little weird to me, and that those could live somewhere else. And I think at least for how I would imagine a math package, that would make more sense. Most of my comments have been around that so far. And one about how, you know, I thought this could be broken up into multiple different PRs, because I'd be most interested for all of these things in actual implementation for how do we make sure that rational, like something like a fractional, for example, which normally in most languages is, you know, here's a class which wraps to, you know, integer types in order to be, you know, the nominator and denominator. How do we make that work so that they have, it has the same affordances of like a F64, for example, or a U64, where it's, you know, immutable, but also equally usable across the Pony code base. Like those for the number types, those would be the things I'd really be interested in. I don't think that a large encompassing RFC like this really addresses those particular bits for me. So that's mostly where I was coming from with my thoughts.
Yeah, I have the same feeling. The one I'm more interested in is the arbitrary persistent packets. And also, yeah, like as a separate RFC with more implementation details. Like, do we want to do our own implementation, grab like some native code, something like that? But also, like for most of these things, like rational or even arbitrary integers, I don't see why there wouldn't be an external library unless we want to do like some optimization for rationals, so that we treat them the same way as integers, like as the rest of the numeric things. So, yeah.
I think a reason for including like fractional and other ones in the standard library would be the same reason there would be for including anything in the standard library, which we have now, like in a couple RFCs, we've commented some on this in terms of setting precedents, which would be, is that we consider like real types or arbitrary precision types or fractional numbers are so core to a certain domain that we believe that having a canonical implementations of them in the standard library, which everybody can use and interoperate with for other libraries to build on top of, is very important versus the ability of people to come up with their own individualized implementations of what fractional, et cetera, might be. And in this way, I'm generally in favor of putting like those numeric types into the standard library somewhere in a way that, whereas like something like say logger that we just removed, you know, I don't think there's any super particular value to having logger in the standard library under that same basic guideline.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that, and just kind of put my yellow highlighter on like the word interoperability as being like kind of the key concept for me there, right? Where this is something where if you have multiple applications, multiple libraries that all want to deal with fractional types, it would be great if they were all using the same interoperable fractional type.
Got it. I think there's also a point to be made that, I kind of get the argument on these ones, but should we be having standard interfaces that work for any numeric type? Like, suppose someone did want to make a numeric outside of the standard library. Can we get good interoperability with that?
So there are some traits already for some of the numeric types, if you go back and look.
Yeah.
So that you could do other implementations potentially as well. And I think as part of a RFC for implementing any of these additional numeric types, I think we certainly should be paying attention when those happen to the idea of making sure that there are interfaces there so that people could still hopefully have a good interoperability story while providing their own particular implementation or type if they wanted to. It might not be perfect, but at least, you know, it should be acceptable through those interfaces.
Right. I know Haskell has a pretty extensive numerics hierarchy. Now, I don't know that it's necessarily as clear as it could be as a result of that, but it's possibly some good prior work.
Yeah, I would agree that having you know traits that are common to the maximum degree that makes sense between the different numeric types, and also being able to be implemented by third party types is a good thing. And looking at prior art, like other languages that have done this, like Haskell or other, you know, other examples, is also good. Okay, anything else we want to cover on this RFC before we move on? Okay, then moving on to the next RFC pull request 193. Make iterator classes private to hide implementation from client. Let's see what's the latest activity on this one. It looks like
and it was just some discussion about some weird format that the author decided to include some HTML file. Okay. But I don't think much has changed with respect to the actual text.
Oh, well, okay. There could be. I mean, there's a 13 commits that were done 6 days ago. So somebody should have a look at it. And although it looked, I guess all of those could be that there's nothing in particular that was done.
The commit messages, I haven't looked at all the commits individually. The commit messages all seem to be related to, well, the last one's add rendered page and updates. So what is that? What are the updates?
Set it's Jekyll hard to tell. It's theme, like rename it. Yeah, it looks like with front, it looks like none of it's content related. Well, it says I've rendered the RFC at blah, 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 at someplace and updated the text. So I guess we should have another look.
Yeah. The last commit has a new file being introduced. So it's like, I can't see what the changes are, but it looks like there are maybe some changes. I just don't.
So basically, you know, basically all of our comment history is blown away. Yes.
Yeah.
By whatever happened.
Yeah. Well, I think
that's thrilling.
I mean, the comments are still there, right? But they're all marked as outdated in the Git view. Because the Git history was like, it's like, you know, the file was like removed and then replaced or something like that.
Right. Well, I'm not going to prioritize looking at this compared to other things, but I will give it a review at some point. That would be my statement then with that.
Okay. Any other comments on that before we move on? Okay. Moving on to RFC pull request 174. Let's do 173 first since they're both on the list.
Okay. Sorry. I was supposed to take No, there was conversation on this last week. Okay. All right. So yeah, let's do 173.
Yeah. So the RFC's pull request 173, latest activity. So I did do a commit, just a small change, adding to the alternatives section, the idea of adding an explicit this parameter to every function signature, which is something that Sylvan mentioned a while ago in a much earlier sync call where this was being discussed. And then there was some comments about it in the RFC and also last week. So I added to the alternatives section. And I also added to the unresolved questions section something that should have been there from before, which is what do we do with the syntax for FFI calls if we use the at symbol for this dot? And then Sean has some comments. I don't know if you want to summarize them instead of me, Sean, just since you're here. I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Let's see.
Basically, you're wary about using a symbol instead
I'm
of this dot.
I'm worried about using the symbol. We already have this. I tried out this in a few different projects that I had. And honestly, I was expecting it to be horrible, and it turned out not to be horrible. So that was nice. I'm still not against the symbol. I'm just, I find myself leaning towards not being in favor of it at this time, right? Let's see, what else did I say? Were there any particular ones? Something that I felt like sort of happened a little in the other conversation was when I mentioned the GitHub REST API thing with a ton of field initialization. I feel like we sort of honed in on this as being, well, 174 is being a solution to this. And I just wanted to pull back out and say, hey, you know, there could be other ways beyond this to do it, but I'm generally in favor of the explicit of this RFC, whether or not 174 came along with it, right? And I'd want to look at 174 kind of on its own, not just as a add-on to this, even though it would require this for that one potentially, but that wouldn't necessarily be the one. And then I presented a straw man where I was trying to think of other things, like, for example, Borja had mentioned the problem with because of the where keyword being breaking, where if you rename a parameter, and you'd often, most of the time when we rename parameters, it's because we want to use that name for a function or a field somewhere else. So I presented the strongman thing of, well, we could make it so that actually params are the thing which you have to access rather than using this. And I was dubious of it, but I wanted to put it out there as an idea. And this seemed to have been roundly disliked by everybody who looked at it.
So I just want to say that, so this thing about breaking the API with name parameters, I don't think it's something unique to Ponent. Like, I think almost every language that has name parameters suffers this problem.
I agree, but it's made worse by the fact, yes, that you need to rename them for this case because it shares the same namespace.
Yeah. So I know that we don't have, like, right now any prior any precedent for having warnings there are not errors in the compiler.
We have very strongly stated in the past that there are multiple people who've been either have been on the Pony Core team or on the Pony Core team, and also the creator of the Pony language, who really do not like warnings that are not errors.
Yeah. So, well, I guess this is not such as a warning, but maybe my suggestion is to only require that this when you would have an ambiguous usage. So if you have, like, don't require this unless it will be confusing, like which name you're suggesting. Like, if you have as soon as you have a name class between parameters, functions, and fields, then you would need this, but otherwise it would be like implicit.
So I want to add a method called foo, but there's already a parameter called foo on a method. So now I have to, every call to the foo method has to be this.foo, but none of the other methods have to be this.whatever. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Or only in the method with the parameter. It says the only location that it's necessarily ambiguous, but
right,
an argument could be made for consistency.
And if I if I call a method called foo in something which has been partially applied or is a lambda, I still think, would that be, well, no, I guess, well, yeah, no, so, okay, no.
So I say this because, like, usually in most of my cases, the problem has been around, like, fields, some parameters, but I feel that usually fields are like private, so it's hard for the names to be confusing in that case. So maybe it doesn't make sense to have the this dot everywhere, unless it's going to be like if the confusing part is only going to happen sometimes.
My first reaction is that I don't like that.
My first reaction is that I think it's better than the status quo. So I would vote for that as an incremental improvement over where we are today. Because specifically the variant where you only have to do this dot if there is a local variable or parameter in the same scope, like the same function, for example, that has the same name as a field or method you're trying to use. If the local variable exists, you have to use this dot to disambiguate. I think that variant would not break the advantage. Would be, you know, it wouldn't break anything existing today, because that kind of code is just not possible today, right? So this is something that people could opt into using, because you either basically any code that could benefit from this has already had to choose a different name for the parameter or the local variable, usually like, you know, the name of the field with a prime. And this would open up the option for those locations to remove the prime from the parameter or local variable, and then add a this dot for the field or method access. And I definitely think that's something that I see as worth voting for as an incremental improvement over where we are today. Doesn't break anything. It only adds more options, but it still avoids ambiguity.
So I'm certainly, I'm worried about like the ability for that to introduce weird and subtle bugs in the back end of the compiler. Well, just in the compiler in general.
Yeah, that's fair.
Now the pony philosophy says that we're willing to accept complexity in order to add complexity in the implementation in order to provide simplicity to the user. But I feel like this is not really adding any more simplicity than requiring this for all of the things. The advantage that it has is that it doesn't break any existing code. But I do worry that this could potentially introduce subtle bugs in the compiler. I think that if we really started to seriously consider this, I would want to do an actual review rather than just being concerned, and look and figure out how this would be implemented and see if this really would be something which ends up being clever in the compiler side and could potentially result in a negative experience due to, you know, being a potential like source of semi-regular bugs in the future.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know off the top of my head, like the implementation details that would lead me to say whether this is actually, like you said, yeah, we should actually review it, right? But yeah, I do see this as the kind of change that could be a very hairy compiler implementation.
Yes. Yes, that would be my concern here. I am really attracted to the idea that it doesn't break any existing code. I have to admit that I really do like, you know, an awful lot about the way that like pony code looks to me right now when I look at it. I didn't like it as much when there was the this in front of it. So I would certainly be open to considering it, even though my initial reaction is it doesn't. I things that generally appeal to me are things that feel like they're coming from some sort of principle. And this does not feel like there's a principle here for this, which is where my initial, I'm not so sure about that comes from.
So there's a pretty straightforward justification, just saying that we always take the last variable that's defined, or we have some, if we have nesting of scopes. And then the simple point of disambiguation comes about just because you cannot override this, and because this always refers to the current object. So it just so happens that you can now refer to that scope of the object instead.
Yeah, I mean, it's worth noting that this is effectively shadowing, right? And I know that shadowing is something that at least some of the original designers of Pony and Sean and, you know, others, right, that are very wary about.
One of my favorite things when I first started doing Pony, and still one of my favorite things, is that it is that within a given scope, it doesn't allow me to shadow things.
Mostly, object literals still kind of can. Sorry to rain on your parade.
I'd be interested in seeing what specifically you mean there, but I think I know what you're referring to. But I would say that there's some things which I would classify as bugs in object literals in general in terms of scoping a little bit. And that might be worthy of an RFC unto itself.
Yeah, I mean, the object literals and lambdas, I think. Right, yeah, because a lambda can implicitly capture a variable from the outer scope just by calling it by name. But I believe it can also define a new variable within its scope that shadows the outer scope. I believe it can, but I need to actually confirm that before I run my mouth too much.
I'm not sure if it can. I do know that there are definitely some scoping issues related to object literals where it has surprising behavior compared to named objects like classes. In particular, for example, the ability to say, to define two fields like X and Y, right, on a class. And for Y, if it's defined after X, initialize Y to be equal to X if they're the same type. And that works just fine on a class, and it does not work at all on an object literal because the scope is actually different. And, you know, there are some surprises there that I'm not sure are actually intentional. And if you were to say there were some interesting shadowing things going on as well, Joe, I wouldn't be surprised about that either.
Yeah, the one you described definitely sounds like a bug to me. And I can't see how that would be intentional, but I could be wrong, you know.
Yeah, I don't think it was, but which leads me to just the general, there are probably some scoping issues related to lambdas and object literals, which are bugs right now, or we would consider to be bugs probably.
Okay.
So, Borja, could you add your suggestion to the RFC?
Yeah, sure.
Thank you.
Okay.
Man, I knew that probably the param dot whatever was not going to be popular, but like seven down, I mean, come on, people. Damn. I'm not even a big fan of it, but I still feel kind of hurt by that.
I hesitated before giving my thumbs down. I was like, I don't want to pile on too much. So, you know.
I was so ready to pile on.
I knew what I was doing before I saw how many people put it on.
All right. Is there anything else you want to cover on 173 or 174 in the RFC's repo? I do want to mention, so Jason raised a point in RFC 174. I think it actually applies more to 173. The point about symbols and glyphs being hard to search for, I found that interesting because when I thought about it, I was like, well, really, I think that that argument ends up, like when I think it through, it weighs more in favor of RFC 173 instead of against it, because if you're going to use a symbol for something, it should be, it should be more ubiquitous, that so that people, once they learn the language, they'll definitely learn what that symbol means at the start, instead of like encountering it halfway through and being puzzled about it and having to search for it and not being able to search for it. I think that, although I think I expressed the same thing to Sylvan, and he had a very, he's like, wow, that's like the opposite from how I would think about the problem. So maybe not universally seen by everyone as being in that case, but like to me, yeah, if you're going to use symbols, they should be very like, they should be common enough that you don't forget what they mean.
I have a slightly different take than you do, Joe, right? I think that judicious use of symbols is non-problematic. We have plenty of symbols that we already know and that we've learned over the course of time, like greater than, equal, you know, the percentage sign for modulo, which might not be, you know, immediately obvious to a lot of people when they come to it. I think everybody is fairly easily learned with Pony that the at sign means FFI, and nobody's running around all the time going, wait, what is that at sign right there? Maybe if they encounter a bare function or something, but they still could potentially have it an inkling that's there. I think that this becomes really problematic when you start using it to the extent, say, that it can be in Haskell, or where some people do some funky things with operator overloading in C++, where you just have like whole swaths of functions now being replaced by combinations of symbols, which are awful similar to one another, oftentimes where you have to remember what they mean, right? That for me is problematic. Like if we were gonna have an at sign for this as compared to FFI, whatever, it's like, it's one small addition there. I don't think it teeters over into a, oh my God, I can't remember what this, you know, what this code does type thing.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, from my point of view, if we were using at for that, right. It's like, if you forgot what the at symbol meant, then it's like, you wouldn't know how to read like any Pony code.
Yeah.
If we were using the at symbols that extensively.
As compared to years ago, when I actually used to write a lot of Haskell, and my biggest problem was I would come back to my Haskell code after not having touched it for 6 months, and I literally couldn't understand what a lot of my code did because I had written it using, you know, the short symbol-based names for a lot of things and not the full names. And in the process, by not using those things, like, I couldn't remember what all of them were. I'm like, oh, this one and that one. But there were just, it was so many combinations of symbols that went together, that when put together in a particular order meant a particular thing. I think that's highly problematic. We want to avoid that. But a symbol here or there, I personally don't think is problematic.
Okay, thanks. Let's open it up to special topics. We're about 40 minutes into the hour. Does anybody have things they want to raise for discussion while we're here together?
So not a special topic, but I wanted to cover one of the issues that we have in the Pony C repo. I think, Son, you asked a question about some like FFI in interfaces, and no one replied.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we can talk about it.
4015.
Sorry, 4015.
It's 3997.
Nope. Which one is it?
3997.
3997. Yes, that's the correct one. 3997. Compiler error does not provide location of error when crossing package boundaries. This is still in effect, Joe, right?
Okay.
Even after the, but it is basically, it comes from the same cause as 2150, which was the one where default methods, right, not having the scope. It's not fixed by what I did for 2150 and 3737, which was one thing, fixed both of those because it goes through different code. And I was considering fixing it when I realized that actually this is slightly different. And so I wanted to bring it up for discussion. And my comment from 5 days ago basically covers it. Should I restate that, or do folks just want to read it?
I've read through it now. Yeah. So I will say I really like the idea. Like, I think there's some details that need to be worked out, mm-hmm. but I'm really in favor of putting FFI calls on a private a private primitive should be the norm for packages that are using FFI, rather than making, you know, periodic FFI calls like throughout the code. And I think that's what you're getting at with approach two.
That would be approach two, yes.
And I will say this dovetails into the previous RFC we were discussing a little bit, because the way I would advocate, like if people really loved using the at symbol for this dot, doesn't sound like we're at that point. If that was the case, and we were moved on to the question of, well, what do we do with FFI calls now? My answer would be something along the lines of make the FFI declaration syntax look less like use statements and look more like a private primitive, where you're declaring the FFI functions as functions on the primitive, using kind of the standard function declaration syntax. That's what I would recommend moving forward with for FFI calls, anyway. But it kind of synergizes nicely with stopping using the at symbol for those. So you still need to do something for bare methods, but yeah, I'm in favor of two if we can work out the details of exactly. I don't know. There's some hairy stuff with like FFI polymorphism that's actually kind of broken right now. Is Red around on the call? I think Red's been running into that recently. Yeah. And so if we could solve some of that at the same time, that would be cool too, right? If we could have type parameters. So if FFI were declared as a private primitive, like as a special kind of private primitive, right? Just for the sake of argument, we'll call it FFI primitive as the keyword you use instead of primitive. Mm-hmm. If you have FFI primitive and it has functions on it, those functions could take type parameters. And now you can have generic FFI functions that you use different type parameters on when you're calling. And it's all done using the normal function syntax. And the only thing special is the FFI primitive keyword instead of normal primitive, and the lack of a body on all the functions you're declaring, because the body is declared in C.
So my only concern with going that way is that right now, by having use declarations, we can have like the same, like we can use this if def for like the function is called this way in Windows and this way in some other operating system, or even the name is the same, but the order of arguments is different. That's not something that we could do easily with normal function declarations. If, for example, they have the same name, right? Because we don't have function overloading. That would be something that we would lose.
I imagine in this case, you would still, it would be that you have a function which takes all of the parameters that would be needed for any of the platforms, and then call, and then does an ifdef to do the correct call. Maybe I think that works for most cases, but there could be some where it just doesn't at all. But I think so for the type of thing that you're talking about right now, right? Mm-hmm. I think what we would really, what we do in the existing one would be is that we say, oh, hey, here's Foo Windows and here's Foo Linux, right? And if from some Linux code inside Foo Linux, I say, if not def Linux, for example, compile error, and we've moved that problem that you're talking about to a slightly different solution, right? And I think that with what Joe is talking about, we could still do the same type of solution to that, where for those situations where the signatures are wildly different between like Linux and Windows or whatever, there can be a Foo Windows and a Foo Linux, and you do compile error if you try to call one from the incorrect language. And that would at least, that would be not any worse for that type scenario than what we currently have. I'm not saying it's great, because I don't think the current one is great, but I think it would be not any worse.
So there's a difference between what you're describing and what James C was describing. That is, do these actually have a body or not? And does the body, does the function name that you're defining have to exactly match the C function name? Those are my two questions. Because there are many, because there are some C functions which I can think of, well, pretty easily off the top of my head, where you've got differing types coming in depending on calls and differing types coming back as return types. And then what do you do when you're talking about var args? I mean, I guess it's different because we're not using fun. So we can, you know, use it differently, but we still have a similar issue there, I think, where we don't necessarily know what arguments are going to be passed in. And we're kind of pushing that problem further down the chain.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's possible that Sean and I were maybe describing or thinking of different things.
I think so, probably, yes.
And yeah, the devil's in the details on this as we're raising. So, yeah.
Mine was for what's in that issue. Is simply a do not allow FFI calls in default function bodies. And so if you needed to have it, you'd have to put it on something like a primitive, and then the primitive still exists in a given namespace. And you are calling something on a primitive, and therefore you are not actually including a second declaration within the same package for an FFI function, and it resolves that issue, right? Is that there's still only one FFI declaration for this particular thing per package.
Yeah, I think that's a pragmatic solution to the immediate problem in issue 399 or 3997. Yeah, I was just sort of like spinning forward to like a further expansion.
I would love to see more, more interesting things around that, around FFI address. That would be great. Some of those, like, I imagine we could probably address almost all of them, except for maybe unions.
The one thing I will say is if we are going to fundamentally change the way that FFI is expressed in Pony, can we also change the, you can have multiple return types from the same function and within a package issue?
Yeah, that's what I was getting at when I was talking about using the type parameter syntax for accounting for that kind of case. I was thinking about specifically the cases you had in mind there.
I'm sorry, Brett.
It's apparently not allowed in generics or unions.
I'm sorry, what?
Can you repeat, Red? You're cutting out audio a bit.
Sorry, structs are not allowed in either types or unions.
Uh-huh.
Generics or unions, I should say.
Well, yes. They're not objects. I mean, at all. In any sense. To address that is... So would you be willing to take a a hit possibly for performance on FFI usage for to get that?
In my use case, yes, but I'm certain that there are people with other use cases that wouldn't.
Okay, so imagine that every call that would impact on every call into the runtime from PonyCode. So it would slow down all TCP stuff, for example, right? Because there are depending on what we're willing to do, there are things that could be done, but that would require some type of translation, right? At the call site boundary, and I think it would be good to discuss for various FFI things, what is the scope of what we're willing to take on, what we aren't. I'm highly dubious of anything where we need to do any sort of translation at the Pony to C level. I think that it is very nice that we don't pay any cost there right now, and I would want to veer away from it. But I think it's reasonable to have a conversation about what is the appetite for potentially solutions which might solve, might more elegantly solve some problems that it did involve some bit of translation and cost at the call level.
Yeah, so I for the record, the solution I was talking about with type parameters, I would not expect that to incur any runtime overhead.
I would not either.
But I want to look closer at Red's use case to see if there's things I'm not covering in it that would then require some kind of other intervention like runtime overhead.
Right. So I personally would, if we find that there's a need for something that would be runtime overhead, I think I would rather, Joe, try and figure out a way to have a mechanism within this special FFI type to be able to get more than one to be able to do something so that we can go from a struct to something else in a reasonable fashion, so that it could be returned in these scenarios as a class or a tuple or something rather than a struct, right? I'm kind of hand waving. Do you know what I mean though?
I would rather that too. That would be much more flexible for me too than having something at runtime.
So I want to make sure I understand the problem we're talking about. Are we talking about the problem?
Red, I wasn't saying a compile time thing, by the way, but keep going, Joe. Sorry.
I want to make sure I understand the problem we're talking about. Are we talking about the problem of having varying return types and having that return type, you know, vary by call site? Or are we talking about the problem of returning like a C struct by value or a pony tuple? Which one of those were we talking about?
That's interesting. Let's go to Red, because I think I made an assumption about what he was talking about, but I'm not sure.
I meant the former, ability to have a different struct type coming back from the same function.
Okay.
Which we used to have.
Right. And honestly, part of me is like, you know, the easy button is to allow it back at the call site. And if it isn't there at the call site, then you know, use whatever the default in the definition is, and then only apply the typing on the, you know, on the arguments. But you know,
that solves the return value varying problem. But some functions could also have a varying argument type.
Right, and to be honest with you, I kind of sidestep those by just using any in my use definition.
Brad, I think you sort of missed. What
the struct can't be subsumed by any,
yeah,
because the struct has no type descriptor.
Oh, then I must be doing point and untags, maybe.
I'm not sure,
I'll have to look.
I've
But I will say that getting values in has never really been the issue for me. It's always been getting the values out, the value types out.
Yeah, and I'm just not sure whether that's because the specifics of the API you're using, or if that, like, if that would be the case for other APIs as well, is what I'm concerned about.
I mean, certainly from what I've seen, from what Redis showed me of the GTK API, it is a very old school C high fuckery void star API, right? I would hope that there aren't people writing C APIs to do that now, as compared to when, you know, GTK was started in the 90s.
It's a big world out there. People are writing all kinds of things.
No, I said hope. I said hope. Of course, people were doing awful, awful things, you know. But at a certain point, I'd just be like, sorry, we're not supporting that awfulness, you know, because of XYZ type thing. Like, because it's just the drawbacks are too big. Like, I don't know how we would ever, somebody smarter than me could come up with this, but I don't know how we would ever support union types, you know, without, while maintaining memory safety. I just don't know how that would be done.
Yeah, it would need to be like a specific kind of union where you had a like defined discriminator that, so you could, we could do like a survey of C APIs where we see like what they're doing for the discriminator, and for some subset of those that are doing some kind of specific pattern for how you discriminate between the union types, if we could like hook into that pattern into our like code generation and type system, we could probably support that. But I'm dubious in general.
Yeah, with union types, I just end up grabbing those pointer U8s and then basically doing my own thing in order to get value out of them, because there's no way of really dealing with it.
So, yeah, well, one thing I've been thinking about is some kind of like cast functionality that was available that would be available to function or to programs that are using, not programs, to packages that are using FFI and have permission to use FFI, that they would also have permission to do a cast of one pony object type into another using an FFI like mechanism to do so, just because it's already possible in C. It's just extra work to do it. And maybe that could solve some union use cases. You do whatever you need to with the discriminator, you cast it to the other type, and you, you're responsible for making sure that's safe because it's an FFI library.
Or perhaps for something like that, Joe, if we could make it so that it's like address of, and you can only use it like with the result coming back from that is a struct that came back from an FFI call, right? And otherwise it's an error to try to do it.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so only at an FFI call site.
That is one possible interpretation of what I said. I was trying to be kind of loosey-goosey and vague,
okay,
right? Where Got we it. Could perhaps do some more intelligent analysis to say that, you assigned it to this temporary variable and now you're casting the temporary variable. But yes, effectively what you said, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, something to look into.
Can you remind me, either you or Borja, what exactly was the thing with Mac OS and the ABI stuff and everything on the ARM based ones where we ran into the problems that had us moved to the FFI declaration?
I
remember that. I just don't remember the details.
Yeah. Yeah. So on the architecture that Apple M1 processors use, there is a very distinct and incompatible calling convention for varargs functions versus specifically varargs arguments versus non-varargs arguments. Whereas on all of the other like CPUs that we have supported on Pony in the past, if you were using you basically the calling conventions were compatible, and Pony at the time was pretending every FFI function was var args. And because the calling convention was compatible, it was okay. But on the new Apple M1 CPUs, the calling convention is not the same, and it was not okay, and bad things resulted.
I have a random idea to throw out. And you, Joe, tell me why this is a bad idea, or Borja, right? So we needed to have the declaration so that we could know whether the thing had var args or not, correct? And do the correct thing?
Yes.
Right. So what if at the time of declaration, we only required you to declare the incoming types, but you could vary the return type at the call site?
Yeah, I think that's what Red was saying. I think that should be okay, you know, provided the same caveat we would have to have for any of these other solutions where the return type has to be like compatible, like, it, you know, like in this case, like it has to be a pointer type, right? You can't say pointer and then and the next one, it returns a U8. It's not going to work that way. But no C functions should work that way either. So that's not a problem in practice, just something to include in the validation. But yeah, I think that that works for the return type, right? And if that's the only problem we need to solve is for the return type, then that is an approach that is kind of a, you know, a nice little incremental chunk that I think could solve that problem.
Yeah, I feel like that would be a good incremental one. And I am very interested though in hearing more about your FFI ideas, like your larger FFI ideas. But I would like to be able to fix this in an incremental fashion where Red is clearly bumping up against it. And I've watched Red doing what I consider awful things, and but awful things that he has to do in order to get around it, right? And I feel like we should fix that, you know.
So I guess one argument that I think it was on the RFC for mandatory declarations was that having to specify the return argument just once could save you from introducing bugs in that. Like, for example, I know printf was used through the through the standard library multiple times, and the return time was different at some parts, and not different in the sense that you really wanted a different type, but just that whoever wrote that made a mistake. So that's one argument for including the return type.
Yeah, to be clear, I think that we should still like do that as the default, right? Like the return type should be declared ahead of time, but if you want to explicitly override it, you now have the option to do so. But you'll be less likely to make a mistake because the easy thing to do is to not declare the return type and leave it at what the default is of whatever it was declared at it as the at the top.
Yeah, no, I would agree with doing that. Yeah.
Okay, I think we're at the end of the hour. Is there anything else we want to cover real quick before we hang up?
I have the PR for the SQL variables.
Yes, so you're feeling good about that?
For the most part, I think it's good to go. I could be happier with it.
You could, well,
I could in theory be happier with it, but I'm not going to get there.
I could always be happier with literally everything that I do ever, always. Yeah, because you know, I'm always convinced I can do better, which is a wonderful personality characteristic to have, and is also really awful. And if anybody who's ever worked for me is listening to this, I apologize for the way that that's impacted on you. People like that are awful to work for.
So I will review this. I haven't taken a look at it in a while, so I'll review it, and then we can move forward from there.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Let's see. Interesting. Joe, give it a review. I'm going to give it. There is the one thing, Jason. So yes, we should remove the thing that's at the to-do in alias.c on 191 and 192.
Right. it's the same as before. I don't think that was the issue.
The sense of this is apparently not correct for what we want now, right?
I do not think it's necessarily ahead of it.
You're the one implemented this.
I'm trying to remember. It's exactly the state it was before any reverts of that.
Right. Your statement was that this causes some things to fail in the standard library that I don't believe should fail. None of my tests, which I believe are fully cover everything, fail without this. So I believe it can be removed.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to add a note that we should remove these two lines.
Okay. It's just adding that.
Okay.
This is a quick question. When I see n.b. in your comments, Jason, what is that the shorthand for?
Nota bene. It's just like a useful note.
Okay. Yes. Thank you.
It's Latin. I enough people have asked me what NB is that I've mostly dropped it from my usage now, but I used to do it all the time and I still do occasionally. Yeah. it's definitely a shorthand for please note that anybody who took Latin.
My first thought was no biggie.
No, it's Latin. It's Latin. Nota bene.
You can I like Joe's meme better.
All right. So, So we'll review that. We'll hopefully get it merged soon. Anything else, real quick, before we depart? All right, then. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on the call and those listening along to the recording later. We'll see you next time.
All right. Oh, I've stopped the recording.